Have you met Mother Ninja before? Mm-hmm. She's been steady and keeping the temple alive here for the last 35 years?
Since 1976.
76, when all of us were in our previous incarnation, mostly. So, you know, without her, we wouldn't be here. So it's really nice to hear from her today.
Do you actually get, like, initiated by Prabhupada?
Yeah. Actually, Srila Prabhupada didn't come here physically for the ceremony, but he sent a letter.
Okay.
And at that time, 1975, 76, 77, he was doing a lot of traveling around the world, and so he couldn't physically possibly go to all the places where the initiations were being held. So he would send a letter saying, you know, these are my duly initiated disciples, and the temple president was authorized to conduct the fire jagya, the ceremony for the initiation.
Okay.
So in that way, he would send a letter, and then the president would ascertain an auspicious day for the ceremony, and then the ceremony would be conducted. And in that way, the transcendental link was there, even though, you know, Srila Prabhupada himself wasn't physically present. But still, the whole formal link had already been made.
Do you have the pleasure to meet him?
One time when I was in Mayapur in 1977, there was a festival that's coming up. It's called Gaur Purnima. It's the appearance day of Lord Chaitanya, who's actually Krishna himself, who appeared a little more than 500 years ago. Krishna appears to show how to become a devotee, be a devotee, chant and dance. So anyway, that festival is called Gaur Purnima. And every year in India, there's a Gaudiya Vaishnava festival. This year we celebrate, I think it's March 7th, Wednesday.
Is it?
And then the 11th or whatever the Sunday is afterwards, anybody who wants to come.
It was a variant day for Chicago.
Yeah, I think for Denver it's the 7th, but we'll check.
They so, better come that day, seriously.
Yeah, it's a really great day. Seriously. So those festivals would be held. And so I went for the festival in 1977. And that was Prabhupada's last festival that he celebrated with all the devotees before he left the planet. This was February, March 77, and Prabhupada left in November 77. So, you know, the devotees, they come and they go according to the will of the Lord, you know, the direction of the Lord. They come and they do their service of spreading love of God, and then according to the Lord's will, then they leave the planet and they go elsewhere and they continue their mission. However the Lord wishes.
Were you here when Prabhupada came to Denver?
No, I wasn't.
Oh, really? Oh, shoot.
Yeah, I was practicing Krishna consciousness, but I actually wasn't here.
Oh.
Pranabalava is the source for that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you ever want to.
I don't know if some of you know there's a museum where Prabhupada lived while he was here right across the street in the temple. Some of his original things, like his chair he sat on and his tape recorder, I'll show you sometimes.
One of the videos I saw was when he was in Denver.
Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah, he used to walk at that park over there, too.
Yeah, he was walking down a park while they were talking.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was talking about snakes or something, and mouses or something like that.
Oh, the mice dig the hole and the snakes live inside?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because you can see that the mouse will make all the endeavor to make the hole, right? And then the snake can go into the hole, eat the mouse, and then live in that hole. So somebody else made the hole for the snake, and then the snake, you know, ate the mouse and conveniently had his abode, you know, tailor-made for him. And so, in similar ways, so many other personalities may make things like parks and lanes and, you know, places to walk and to enjoy. And others may go, like the devotees, the Prabhupada, may go there and enjoy the places that someone else endeavored to make, just like that mouse, you know, made a big endeavor to make the hole, and then the snake wound up enjoying, you know, the little abode of the mouse's hole as his, you know, home. So Prabhupada was saying, similarly, so many personalities may endeavor to make these wonderful parks, and we can go and enjoy there because of their efforts. You know, you didn't have to lift a finger to do anything to create the park. It's already created. So he said, in that way, we're able to enjoy so many things in this world. So I was just thinking how tomorrow is the appearance day of Prabhupada's guru, Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta, and his spiritual master is a really special, unique personality. In India and maybe other places, the devotees celebrate usually the evening before a festival, and they call it the Adivas. I know in Mayapur they do. And so the evening before, they maybe chant, and like we're doing tonight, and celebrate and honor, begin to celebrate and honor the personality that, you know, will be celebrated the next day. So they call it the Adivas. So we're kind of doing that tonight. And so tomorrow we'll have some readings. We'll have 11:45 in the morning. We have what's called Pushpanjali, which is offering of flowers to Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta in the temple. And then we have aarti at 12. And then after that, lunch, some prasad. And then 1:30 we're going downtown, right, Prabhu? So we're going downtown chanting at 1:30 on the mall, 16th Street Mall. So if anybody would like to come, chant.
You said that's tomorrow.
Yeah. So this is all in honor of Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta, who's Prabhupada's guru. And he appeared in the late 1800s in India, in Jagannath Puri, in Orissa. And he appeared in a very special way. Actually, his father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, was a great devotee of Krishna. And his father was wanting to push on the mission of spreading love of God. So he wanted an assistant, someone to help him in the service of spreading love of God. So he thought, why not have a child, you know, who could come and help, or just somebody could come and help. And so he would pray to have a special child to assist him in the mission of God consciousness. And then when this child, I don't know if he was the fifth, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur had about 10 children or something like that, a little less than a dozen, and they were all pure devotees of the Lord. So this Bimal Prasad, as he was named, when he appeared with his umbilical cord wrapped around his neck like a Brahmin's thread. Different signs are there, you know, for understanding that someone is a great personality, special personality, you know. And so that was one of the signs. And then, of course, he appeared in a great family of pure devotees of the Lord. And one day, when he was just a baby, there was a festival in the town of Jagannath Puri where they take the Lord, the deity of Jagannath, on the cart, and the cart stopped in front of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house. And so Bimal Prasad's mother took baby Bimal up onto the cart to get the mercy of the deity, blessings of the deity for her newborn son. And one garland from the Lord fell on the child. So again, another auspicious sign of a special personality coming. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur could understand that this boy is the one I prayed for. You know, he's special. He's going to be the one to help push on this mission of Krishna consciousness. So you could see, you know, this is indication from the Lord. So as Bimal Prasad grew, he was a complete genius. By age 7, he had memorized the whole Bhagavad Gita. And he would remember everything that he read. He was called a Shrutidhar. Means he can remember anything. He was also in his later years, I suppose student years, called the walking encyclopedia. Because any knowledge that he studied, he would remember. And he studied a lot. And he was a great astrologer, or astronomer and astrologer. He studied astronomy and math. And so he's a complete genius. And not only a genius in topics like astronomy and astrology and different Vedic sciences like that, but he was a spiritual genius. And he was later on called Nrsinga Guru. He was such a great, powerful guru that anyone who was at all false or lacking in truth or honesty or in any way a cheater, you know, especially a spiritual cheater, he would expose them because he was so spiritually pure and powerful. And one special aspect of his nature and his preaching was that he was opposed to all impersonalism. In other words, everyone's a person, eternal person, part and parcel of God, and everyone has that personhood eternally. And so for cheating philosophies and cheating so-called religionists to present philosophy that you're, you know, not an eternal person, an individual, always, and to take away that personhood from you and from the Lord himself is a big cheating. And it's called impersonalism. So it's just like if someone's telling you, no, you're not who you are. You're not eternal or individual person, and therefore I'm going to take away from you all qualities and aspects of your personhood. So this is a very cheating philosophy and degrading to the soul and to Krishna, to God himself. So Bhaktisiddhanta was very much opposed to this bogus philosophy, and he dedicated his life to preaching against it so that all souls would have the spiritual freedom of understanding really who they are and not be cheated by impersonalism. And so he was actually feared by many. They say that if an impersonalist was walking down the road and they saw him, they would go to the other side and try to completely avoid him. So what he did was he established a freedom for all of us. You know how we have freedom fighters in history and great personalities in history who have preserved our freedoms and our rights and our cherished liberties or whatever. Well, he is on a spiritual plane, one of those great personalities. We may not have even heard about him, but he has set the scene for so many of us who are learning a little bit about him to appreciate what he's done for us spiritually. In other words, to be able to, in our life, learn and express our innate spiritual personhood is a great liberating experience. And this is something that he set the scene for. And Srila Prabhupada, of course, continue to oppose any kind of bogus teachings and bogus philosophy. So in that way, we may never have heard of him before or knew very little about him, but he's actually a great spiritual warrior and revolutionary that has helped us in our lives. A lot of times there's people that you may not have even have heard about or knew about that have made significant contributions to your life. And he is one. So I just thought it would be noteworthy to mention him. And then it gives us an idea of how we can introspect, look within ourselves, see who we really are as eternal persons, and try to understand what it was that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta was trying to present and teach and fight against. And you know, who am I in terms of this eternal personality that he is so much paving the way for all souls to appreciate, you know. So he's very special. And tomorrow is a day to meditate on him and learn more about personalism in spiritual life. What does it mean for us as individuals to understand personalism? And how does impersonalism, like sometimes people say, oh, don't be so impersonal or, you know, insensitive, or, oh, this modern world is so impersonal. And, you know, people aren't made to be robots and nobody's really personal. It's just like a mechanized world. And you know how we say all these things. So impersonalism is something that innately we don't really like. And it's kind of insidious. It pervades, you know, modern society and even our own consciousness. So to be able to become freed from that is a spiritual emancipation for all of us. To drop any kind of impurities, any kind of things that get in the way of expressing, you know, pure love. And certainly impersonalism gets in the way. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta is a great warrior. There he is. Spiritual warrior.
There's a picture of him in there, too.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I think that one's
Bhakti. Another room?
Yeah.
So, like, if you deny, like, your personality or who you are, is it, like, denying an expression of Krishna, or...?
Yeah, in a way, because if we're all part and parcel of Krishna, and Krishna is the Supreme Person, and we say that, well, we're not a person. You know, we have no personhood eternally, that we're just some, you know, chemical or whatever. Then yeah, in that sense, indirectly, you know, we deny the Supreme Person of whom we are part and parcel of. It's just like, say, if you had in your family, you know, you denied your parents, you know, you're like a really rebellious youth, and you said, you know, I'm not part of this family. I don't have anything to do with them. I'm not a person involved with this family. You know, And, you know, it's kind of hurtful to the mother and father. And they don't feel so happy that the child's, you know, completely denied family scene and run away. And doesn't want any connection, doesn't want any relation, denies all relation. So it's kind of like that, you know, denying the true relationship that we have and the true nature that we are.
Like something that I've seen, like, in other religions or whatnot, is they're kind of, like, zombied out when they go into, like, a church or something. And then they just, like, they just follow the same, like, zombie character. And then they walk out, and then they change to whoever they are. You know? But, like, the fact that you want to express that, because we can express love for Krishna in different ways. Right? Like, I don't know. Right. It's kind of, I like that, like, the personal aspect.
Yeah, you figure everybody is an individual. There's no two alike in all of creation. No two souls exactly alike, although everybody's got the same qualities, you know, spiritual qualities. But there's, everybody is totally unique. It's really wonderful. And yet we're all part and parcel of the Supreme Personality. Therefore, you know, if Krishna has certain qualities, and we have those qualities also, in less quantity. And he's a supreme person, so we're a person also. And so, yeah, to be able to understand that is freeing us from a lot of anxiety, a lot of anxiety and distress, and lack of spiritual growth, and many, many things comes from not understanding who we are, being impersonal, and denying the real eternal nature. It causes a lot of distress to the psyche, to the soul, to the heart.
I was starting just that metaphor about, you know, like, they kind of, there's an example given, like, the impersonalist, you know, aspires to merge in, you know, to the absolute oneness. And it's like compared to, you know, you go to your mother and you say, you know, actually, you know, Mom, I don't really like who I am and I don't like this world, so can I just crawl back inside your womb, you know, and just be there? And it would be detrimental to her psychology. It would be very, very, very disturbing, you know. It's a very, you know, it's a very dark, dark thing, you know.
Two more dogs.
It's like denying yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a complete denial. And everybody knows when there's denial, then what are you doing? You're denying yourself so many wonderful things. You know, if you're denying yourself,
you know, another thing that's kind of interesting is because, like, when Prabhupada came at it, they were telling him, is like, how are you getting all these hippies to stop doing drugs and, like, to actually be clean and stuff like that and be meditating or whatnot? And then, kind of like, people do drugs to escape who they are, because they're stuck into this, like, personality they society wants them to be. So, like, the fact that they were going into, you know, Hare Krishna and expressing that spirituality from them, that part of them, it made them not need that. It's like, you know what, I don't need that anymore. It's like, I can express myself without that.
Yeah, and as Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, he came into this world to help all souls to be able to do that, to truly express their real nature. In fact, he's called a Shaktivesh Avatar in Sanskrit, which means one who descends with the empowerment of the Lord to distribute love of God. So he's a special empowered being. And Srila Prabhupada also, Lord Jesus, so many personalities like that. Especially empowered to help souls to, again, reawaken pure love. So when you think about personalities like him coming into this world just for us, then we think there's something very special. I think maybe it would be interesting to know about them, to appreciate them, to glorify them. It says, birds of a feather flock together, and with whomever you associate, you become like them. So just to meditate on these personalities and to be aware of them, appreciate them. It's an association, and that bolsters your own spiritual life to be associated with such a personality. So, is there anything else?
We're all eternal. We can just keep going. We'll just wait. We'll just do a rod. Wait till the sun rises.
As Prabhupada was saying, that the hippest thing is that I've come to make you hippies happy.
So the two reported to I'm going to turn them all the hippies into happies. The reporter is like, so what's a hippie? Like, you know better.
So, how do you describe them? Something extraordinary.
Yeah, so everyone can celebrate this wonderful occasion tomorrow. Wherever you are, you can meditate on Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, get his association, see what he's done for you as an individual. It's not like he's not part of your life, really. That's the thing about spiritual personalities, even I understand many personalities have come to this planet. Like Lord Jesus, Prabhupada, incarnations, Buddha, and so many personalities have come. Great gurus like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta and his father, his guru and his guru and his guru. And they all have paved the way for us to be able to get freed from all these things that are getting in the way of our pure spiritual life. So that's pretty amazing.
I like the phrase you said, their freedom revolution.
Freedom fighters.
Yeah. So they're not in present, at least in front of the eyes, but their sacrifices are helping us today.
And those are still in present.
Yeah, these are. Of course, they're eternal personalities, right? And they also are present in the sense of, their transcendental spiritual presence. It can be there. And they can help. It can assist you in your spiritual life. Just by following in their footsteps, it says. When a great guru gives instructions or shows an example and you follow in the footsteps by taking up those instructions and examples, then you're associating with that person and you get the blessings and benediction of that personality. And they are actually present in your life, even though maybe you're not physically seeing them. Anything else from the day base or anything for this we can add?
I was just trying to find that poem by Bhakti Siddhanta. Or Bhakti Mahatakura. The reasons they would say that Vaishnava is like that.
The door is doing sound.
Yeah. Do you know that for this?
So I kind of thought of what does Siddhanta mean?
Siddhanta, the conclusion. Bhakti Siddhanta, the conclusion of all knowledge, all scriptural injunctions, is bhakti, or love and loving devotional service. Bhakti Siddhanta. So he embodies that, his whole life, and embodied that, bringing forth the conclusions of loving devotional service, especially through chanting the holy names. One time he took a, what was the vow? Was it a billion names or something?
No, 1 billion
names. 1 billion names he took a vow to chant. And so he put himself in a hut, which had a hole in the roof, and when it would rain, he'd just stick up an umbrella and just sit there and chant. What did it take? 9 years or something?
9 years.
He just,
and that's like 100.
That's what he did all day. And he just, he did that as like a kind of a precursor for his mission, to show the value of preparing yourself for a mission, purifying yourself, although he didn't need to purify himself, but just to like get immersed in the sanctified service of chanting the holy names, and then go out there and give it to the whole universe.
What is a billion, like a billion mantras? There are a billion names. Is that different?
Yeah.
Names.
So you should do the math.
Yeah. I'm not sure.
He was like a brilliant mathematician.
Yeah,
too.
He was.
He like defeated some great scholar at astrology when he was like 12 years old or something. And then he like renounced it because he was like, this has nothing to do with like devotional service. Not
going to
pursue
it. Yeah. It's kind of a gross detail, that story, but he beat the scholar so badly because this was a great scholar, and the scholar was so shocked that he actually like wet his pants.
Yeah.
He's
you just had to share it. Well, by the way.
And he never married. He never married. Ever. Not that we shouldn't marry, but...
Now just, you're telling me great things, Mother Nidra. I appreciate it.
No, his great father was married. And, you know, he just showed the other example. His father showed the example of a great devotee who was married. And then he showed the example of a lifelong celibate. And his other brothers and sisters, there was one other, maybe he didn't, or a few others who might not have married. But anyway, they were all pure devotees. So they all, you know, like Prabhupada, he was married and he showed the example of pure devotee as a dutiful householder. Yeah, so he never married, and in fact, he concluded, he never finished his higher education. As far as I know, he left that because he didn't want to be kind of locked into a career and a whole life of grihastha life, you know, that his parents would arrange for him. Arranged that he, you know, finish his schooling, get his career, and get married, you know, just like a kind of a normal scene that most parents would have arranged for their children. So he just avoided all of that. I think he just dropped his studies, and he, anyway, his favorite books and author was his father. Nishul Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a great writer and author. And he just wanted to read his father's books. At one point, that was all he was interested in. So he just left the normal scene and became completely renounced from all, you know, household type of life.
Would you like to tell one of his famous stories, the boatman story?
The boatman story? Oh, that one that he told?
That was, he told that one.
He told that story.
Oh, okay. Yeah, tell it
to
Ruth. Tell it. Share
the
nectar.
Yeah, please. Okay, so, for order. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Sirvis Thakur was trying to give a spiritual instruction to some of his followers about, like, how important it is to actually advance and what it takes to actually advance. So he was giving the story of a marriage party. Like, you know, in India, marriage party means, even probably here, that they probably now go in cars, but they used to go, like, across villages to, at that time, they used to cross the rivers, so they needed to go in boats. So this family, they had to go to the other side, to the other village, and they hired this boatman was supposed to take them to the other side, and it was the evening, I think. I said, okay, we'll get you. And there by midnight or something. And he started doing it. He started rowing the boat, and everybody was happy, you know, chit-chatting. And everybody fell asleep. They got up this morning, and still the boatman was rowing. And it was still the same place. So they were surprised and said, I don't think we moved even a feet from where we are. And he said, boatman, I've been rowing all night. Actually, I did not stop. I was actually rowing all night. And they just found out that the anchor was still stuck to the shore, to something, and it was never released. So Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was explaining that unless we give up these material attachments that we cultivate, we can actually not progress. So he's giving the story that the boat of spiritual life will never move unless we actually make an effort. Is that right?
Yeah, and then one time his parents went to market and purchased mangoes for the deities. They would make offerings of fruits and vegetables, etc., to their home deities. So then they would take the offering and serve to the family, offer everything to the Lord first. So when they'd come back from market with the mangoes, the child, Bimal Prasad Bhaktisiddhanta, was only maybe Prabhupada said 3 or 4 years old. He was just a child. And he had taken one of those mangoes before offering to the deities. And so then Prabhupada said that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the father of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, mildly rebuked the child, Bimal Prasad, for taking the mango before being offered to the deity. And so the child made a vow, a lifelong vow, to never ever take mango in his whole life. And so sometimes when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was a guru and had disciples, they would, you know, maybe like to offer him mango, but he would say, no, I am a fender, I will not take mango. And Prabhupada said, mango is the king of fruits, so everybody loves mango. And in India, they have mango season. Like Omkar would tell me how the Gurukula boys would get literally sick on eating so many mangoes. But so he, even though he was so young, he thought, oh, this, I shouldn't have done this, you know. I took this before it was offered to the Lord, so therefore I will never take mango again. You know, such a young child to make such a vow and to follow it. It showed his, you know, character.
There's one other nice instructive story that you can tell about the mercy of the teacher and the guru. So I found the first line of the poem and then the other lines of the poem in separate places. I don't know what the deal is. But I'll read that after I read the story. So the story was that once there was a a man who was stuck in a well, and he was calling out for help, please help me, please help me. It was a deep well. And then the other person came, who was like the guru, to the top of the well and said, the man's calling, please help me, please, and send something to get me out. And the man on top of the guru said, okay. And so he got a rope and he threw the rope down to the bottom of the well, and the rope's hanging in front of the man. And the man looks up and says, please help me hold on to the rope. Please help me hold on to the rope. So he said, that's like what we do. We call out for the teacher, and then the teacher sends the instructions. But instead of realizing that we have to hold on to ourselves, we just think, please help me. That's our job. We got to hold on to the instructions. And then, anyways, I like the story. Here's the thing, the poem. He reasons ill who tells that Vaishnavas die. When thou art living still and sound, the Vaishnavas die to live, and living try to spread the holy name around.
There's still more to that?
No, there's a lot more, but there's I can't find it anywhere online, the whole thing. It's like ridiculous. The only thing that's not on the internet is this one.
Do you read some souls?
I found most of them. I was pretty. They just didn't put the first, which is the most famous one. I put the first one. Alas, for those who spend their days in festive mirth and joy, the dazzling deadly liquid forms their hearts forever employ. The shining bottles charm their eyes and draw their hearts' embrace. The slaves of wine can never rise from what we call disgrace. Was man intended to be a brute in work and heart? Should man, the lord of all around, from common sense depart? Man's glory is in common sense dictating us the grace that man made to live and love the beauteous heaven's embrace. The flesh is not our own, alas, the mortal frame a chain. The soul confined for former wrong should try to rise again. Why then this childish play in that which cannot be our own, which falls within 100 years as if a rose ablown? Our life is but a rosy hue to go ere long for naught. The soul alone would last forever with good or evil fraught. How deep the thought of times to be, how grave the aspect looks, and wrapped in awe become, O we, when reading nature's books. Man's life to him a problem dark, a screen both left and right. No soul hath come to tell us what exists beyond our sight. But then a voice, how deep and soft, within ourselves is left. Man, man, thou art immortal soul, thee death can never melt. For thee thy sire on high has kept a store of bliss above. To end of time thou art, O his, who wants but purest love. O love, thy power and spell be mine, now melt my soul to God. How can my earthly words describe that feeling soft and broad? In enjoyment, sorrow, what but lots, to which the flesh is heir. The soul that sleeps alone concludes, in them it hath a share. And then, my friends, no more enjoy, nor weep for all below. The wine and flesh of beasts, no love on thee bestow. But dying to love thy brother man, and give thyself to God. And God doth know your wages fair, this fact is true and broad. Forget the past this is one of the famous ones. Forget the past that sleeps, and never the future dream at all. But act in times that are with thee, and progress thee shall call. But deem me not in reasoning cold, the soul is made alone, by earth's mechanic lifeless rules, and to destruction prone. My God who gave us life and all, alone the soul can kill, or give it all the joys above his promise to fulfill. So push on, push thee onward march, O soul, against an evil deed, that stands with soldiers' hate and lust, O hero, be indeed. Maintain thy post in spirit world as firmly as you can. Let never matter push thee down, O stand, heroic man. O Sarangrahi Vaishnava soul, thou art an angel fair. Lead me on to Vrindavan, and spirit's power declare. There rests my soul from matter free upon my lover's arms. Eternal peace and spirit's love are all my charming, chanting charms. Okay, it's...
Chanting charms.
Chanting charms.
Sometimes, you know, they...